You and I live in an age of great time-saving devices. We have fast cars that can get us to places very quickly. We have all manner of communication devices between cell phones and computers and the internet. We're able to reach virtually anybody, anywhere, even across the world. We have microwaves if we're in need of a quick dinner. We have dishwashers that will clean up after our dinner for us. We have washers and dryers to clean our clothes. And yet it's paradoxical, I think, that we live in a world of such unparalleled conveniences, yet we seem to have less time, don't we? We seem to have less time now more than ever. We spend a great deal of our time even taking care of these time-saving devices. Time, though, is a precious commodity in the world around us, especially as businesses speed up and the pace of life speeds up. Time is something very precious to us. So what is time? Time, we know, is something that we can't touch. It's not something that interacts with our five senses. We can't touch it or smell it or see it. We can't stop the time, even though we can pull out our cell phones or cameras and sort of take a snippet of time and remember that moment. So we're not able to stop it. Time seems to march on in spite of our best effort to slow it down or to stop it. Our eyesight will dim no matter how much we refuse to believe that it does. Our hair will continue to gray no matter how much coloring we use. Our hearing fades no matter how much we insist that our mind was just somewhere else. We're constantly reminded, though, of time passing, since we all live by the clock. We have to be at work by a certain time. We have to work a certain number of hours so we can earn money for the necessities of life and all those wonderful conveniences that, at least on paper, are supposed to save us time. We wear clocks on our wrists. We have clocks in our cars. We have signs along the street that even flash at us and tell us what time it is. We have appointment books. We have calendars. We have reminders to make sure that we're on our way at a certain time so we can be timely. All too often, though, time becomes something cheap to us, and in some cases, it's just wasted away. As much as we may try, we never seem to be able to master time. We say things like, oh, I just don't have enough time, or I simply lost track of time. God, though, is the master of time. If you go over with me to the book of Isaiah, there's an interesting statement here that Isaiah makes. Isaiah chapter 57. Isaiah 57, in the first half of verse 15, Isaiah 57, verse 15, for thus says the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place. Our God inhabits eternity. He's certainly not limited by things he makes, but there is some basis of time even that he dwells within, it seems. He inhabits that space, if you will, that time. He inhabits eternity. We know that he has always existed. He will always exist into the future. Have you ever stopped to consider that as creator of all exists, God created time for us? He created time for us. There's some interesting sayings regarding time. One of them says, before there was time, nothing was ever late. Some may like that saying and wish that it still applied. Time is God's way of keeping everything from happening at once. It's another saying. In the great cosmic scheme of things, everything is on time. Time, though, is different for God than it is for us. Since our God is spiritual, he's not limited like we are by the constraints of time, by the physical aspects of time. Again, we see here in Isaiah 57 that the God inhabits eternity. The measuring and the passage of time is different for him than for us. We don't know exactly what that looks like. We know from 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8, he describes 1,000 years for him as a day for us. And what that exactly looks like within the spiritual realm, we can read verses and we can sort of imagine. But we do know that time is important to God. We do know that time is very important to God. The Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, the annual holy days, the Jubilee, even all the sacrificial laws, they all included instructions regarding how long and when to keep or do different things. They were all aspects of time. Count so many days, then observe this. When it comes time for this holy day, then fast for this period of time. 3 times a year, do this or that. These are all aspects of time. And so we see time built into a lot of what God has laid out for us, both in days to observe as holy and the countings of different things. If you were to do a word search sometime on the word holy, you would see some interesting verses that pop up that connect the aspects of time to God and his laws, and his statutes, and his judgments. Time is very important to God, especially when it involves how and when we're to worship him, or as it teaches us some spiritual aspect. In those cases, then that time becomes sacred. It becomes holy. Today in the sermon, I'd like to talk about time from God's perspective, specifically sacred time, as it relates to his Sabbaths. From the beginning, we know that God established time. Let's read about this back in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, at the very beginning, or near the very beginning. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2. Genesis 1 verse 2 says, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day." Man has sort of skewed this and said that our daytime cycle is from the middle of the night to the middle of the night. But here we see how God counts a day. His time allotment for any given day begins with the night and then concludes with the day. And so we see here God marking time. And throughout the rest of the chapter, we see that every aspect of his creation ends with that phrase. The night and the day were the second day, the third day. He didn't just establish time and then sort of roll the rest of the creation out, sort of onesie, twosie, or sort of on a whim. It was very structured, and it was based around time. If we go over one chapter to chapter 2, chapter 2 and verse 1, we see the final aspect of this week. "Thus the heavens and the earth," verse 1, "and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. The word sanctify here literally means to consecrate. It means to purify or to make holy. But here we see God taking a specific period of time, one day out of seven, one seventh of the overall week. He took a specific period of time and he set it apart. He sanctified it. He called it holy. He sanctified that seventh day, this day that we're here worshiping God, this 24-hour period of time he established here in Genesis chapter 2 as holy. He set it apart. It's a period of time that is sacred to our God. I asked earlier, what is time? Technically speaking, I understand time is space. It gets really confusing when we look at how man tries to define time. But nonetheless, it's a system of measuring some sort of duration. It can be a week, it can be a day, but it can also mean the specific allotted period during which something is done. So you might say, do you have time next week to come to my house? Or you could say, do you have time to help me with the dishes? Right? It could be a specific day, but it can also be something, a period of which some activity is done within. So within this context then, it sort of begs the question, just because God sets that time apart, that seventh day, just because he set it apart, why is that time holy? Right? Why is that time holy? Why not some other time? Right? God chose this seventh day. Why didn't he work for 3 days and take some time off, then work for another few days? He chose to make that day holy. And as we come down through the thousands of years to where we are today, that time cycle hasn't been broken. And we still keep the seventh day holy to our God, as he established here in Genesis chapter 2. Exodus chapter 3 and verses 1 through 6, you can read that later, but it essentially says that something is holy if God's presence is there, right? If God's presence is contained within something, then it's defined as holy. Exodus chapter 3 is the instance where there's a burning bush, and we see that that area is holy. The bush itself isn't holy. We can go back here to Genesis 1, and we don't see that bushes are holy, right? But God's presence was in that bush. And so therefore, the communication that we read, the instruction that we read there in Exodus chapter 3, is that because God's presence is there, that bush and that ground around it was holy because of God's presence. We read earlier that God rested on the seventh day. He rested. That day is holy because of God's presence. God's presence was in that day, and therefore that day was set apart. It was holy. Let's turn forward to the book of Mark, sort of Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2, and notice verse 23, Mark chapter 2 and verse 23. Now it happened that he, Jesus, went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and as they went, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. And the Pharisees said to him, "Look, why do you do what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" Verse 25, he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry, he and those with him? how he went into the house of God and ate the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priests, and also gave some to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. He's Lord of the Sabbath. The phrase here means controller or master. He's Lord of the Sabbath. Why is he Lord of the Sabbath? Why is he not Lord of Wednesdays or Mondays or any time after work or only on the weekends? Why is he not Lord of my meals and when I sit down to eat? Why is he Lord of the Sabbath here in this verse? If we go back to an earlier statement, it's God's presence that is in the Sabbath that makes that day holy. And so when we look at this verse from that perspective, why is the Son of Man Lord of the Sabbath? Because the God family dwells in the Sabbath, and Jesus Christ is our high priest and our king, is Lord of the Sabbath. He's in the Sabbath. His presence is there, making that day sacred, unique among the other 7 days of the week. Let's go back to the book of Leviticus, chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23 is the only chapter in the Bible where all of God's festivals are located, all of his Sabbaths. Leviticus chapter 23, in verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. The phrase holy convocation there in verse 2 occurs 11 times throughout this chapter. It's not just a one-off. It's not just for certain occasions. It's for these specific festivals. We can't denote something as holy. We can't denote a holy assembly. The word convocation there literally means an assembly for a religious purpose. A holy convocation is an assembly for a religious purpose. Verse 3, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. The Sabbath is a day of solemn rest, and it's an assembly for a religious purpose. We're assembled together. Others on the webcast are assembled together as we collectively appear before God at this commanded holy convocation. Continuing here, you shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. And if we were to go through the rest of the chapter, we would see that each of the seven festivals are also stated here as holy convocations. Exodus chapter 20, let's go back just a bit. Exodus chapter 20. And beginning in verse 8, we read of one of the Ten Commandments that outlines the observance of this day, the fourth commandment. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. It's interesting how this is worded. We're not just to remember the Sabbath day. Right? That day comes around every 7 days. We no doubt will remember the days of the week. We remember that come Monday, many have to go back to work. Some of you may have to even work tomorrow or tonight after sunset. We're told to remember to keep it holy. Not keep it common, not keep it our way, not to do whatever we want, but make sure you go to church. Right? That Sabbath day, from night all the way through the entirety of the next day, as we read back in Genesis 1, God's definition of that time period, we're to remember to keep it holy. Not to keep it as we want it, not just to remember the Sabbath, period, but we're commanded here to remember to keep it holy. That time period is to be sacred, set apart. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested. The word there means to pause after labor. And rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. He established that day for his people as his. There are 6 days we're told to do work. That's the time for our occupation, for our jobs, for our yards, for our houses, for our shopping. 6 days to do our business. 6 days to make something. But this day, verses 8 through 11, tell us that God blessed for a different purpose. God established that day, that time period, for us to remember to keep it holy. Remember to keep it holy. And if we begin to sort of build some of these concepts, the only way something is holy, going back to Exodus chapter 3 with the burning bush, is for God's presence to be there. So if we sort of insert that here into verse 8, we're told to remember to keep the Sabbath day and remember to make sure that God's presence is in that day. You and I have the option of what we do during this 24-hour period of time. From last night's sunset, throughout the night, throughout the early morning hours, this afternoon, all the way into this evening at sunset, you and I have free will. We can do with that period of time whatever we want. God, verse 1, spoke these words through Moses, and in verse 8 tells us to remember to keep God's presence in this time period. It's by us keeping God's presence in this time period that it then remains holy for us. We're all here because we've proven to ourselves that the Sabbath is to be kept. But when was the last time that maybe you or I took a step back to remind ourselves of what it means to keep the Sabbath holy? That aspect. We could say, oh, well, on the Sabbath, I do this, and I usually do this, and I definitely don't do those things over there. But if we just zero in on this concept of keeping it holy, when was the last time we considered that within our own Sabbath observances? Is the Sabbath, and by extension, all of God's holy days, sacred to us? We tend not to use that word, but it's another word that could be substituted in here. Something sacred. Do we see this day and God's festivals as sacred? Do we acknowledge God's presence in those holy days? Days that God is intimately involved with. Now let's go forward just a little bit here. If you're still here in Exodus, let's go forward to chapter 31. Exodus chapter 31. And beginning in verse 13, we see some more instructions regarding the Sabbath. Exodus 31, verse 13, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall be surely be put to death, for whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. The word rested there is actually the root word for the word Sabbath. It's set aside for a time of rest. He rested himself and was refreshed. Do you ever think that God needs to take a break? Do you think God needed to rest from a perspective of rejuvenation, of refreshment, from a what we would think of from a physical perspective? We work hard during the day, and we come home that evening, and we're what? We're beat, right? We're wiped out. If we were on our feet all day, maybe our feet hurt, maybe our legs hurt. We need a time of rest and refreshment. And so we'll kick back that day after a hard day's work, and we'll enjoy something cool to drink, a little meal, we're off to bed, and we sleep well that night because we worked hard, right? Our physical bodies needed that physical rest. Why do you think God did this, though? God, who created everything, who's supreme, who is ultimate, and has all authority within the universe, do you think he needed some sort of rest, like we would need rest after working hard? He set us here this example, a beautiful example, that we dedicate one day and seven to being focused on him, to ensuring that our actions on that day include God and his way of life. If by extension we don't keep the Sabbath holy, it's not sacred, what then does it become? If we choose to not rest and seek that refreshment from a spiritual perspective, if we fail to bring God's presence into our life on this day, on this time period, then what is it that day becomes? We see there's a mention in this section of Scripture about it becoming profane. If we profane the Sabbath, then that person is cut off and killed. Let's go over to the book of Ezekiel. Let's look a little bit more closely at this. Ezekiel chapter 22. Ezekiel is here crying out against the sins of Jerusalem. He's calling Israel's wicked leaders to task. And here in verse 26, he helps answer this question about what is profane. And if we bring our own things and thoughts and activities into this time period of the Sabbath, then he describes essentially what you and I have done. Ezekiel 22 and verse 26, her priests have violated my law and profaned my holy things. They have not distinguished between the holy and unholy, nor have they made known the difference between the unclean and the clean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbaths so that I am profaned among them. When we distance ourselves from God's presence on this Sabbath day, we have essentially hidden our eyes on this day, on God's day. We've hidden our eyes. This is the very thing that Israel was doing. This is what Ezekiel is crying out against the leaders, but by extension, the people of Israel here, they were literally hiding their eyes from God's Sabbaths. The priests, the teachers were not making known the difference between the clean and the unclean, the holy and the unholy. And as a result, as we continue back up the verse, they violated God's law and they profaned him. To profane here means to defile, and defile, something we would never intentionally do to God, right? To defile something seems vile and evil. But this is exactly what the people at the leadership of the priesthood was doing. They were profaning God. They were defiling him because they were not able to make this distinction between what was clean and unclean and holy and unholy. And as an extension of that, then they were hiding themselves from the very day that God set aside for them to come to him, to be in his presence, for him to be in their presence. They were hiding and essentially saying, no, not now, not today, not this week. So here we see this difference between holy and profane. Human nature being what it is, it's probably not that hard for us to profane the Sabbath, is it? The word profane also means to make it common, to make something common. It's no longer special. It's no longer special. It's no longer set apart. Imagine if you were to take a special someone and invite them out to a special something, right? And you send the invitation and you say, on this date at this time, I'll pick you up and we've got something great in mind, right? We'll hang out, we'll eat, we'll enjoy, we'll dance, we'll spend time together. It will be a grand evening. Right? Then you proceed to show up and you're in tattered clothes and the car's a wreck and there's nothing really special about the evening. You do a drive-through and, you know, you're back home. It's you've made it common. It isn't special. It wasn't special. There was nothing special about it. God here is upset with Israel and Israel's priests because they had failed to realize that God was part of that Sabbath day. And they were literally turning away from him on that Sabbath day and doing their own things. So in what ways would it be possible for us to make the Sabbath common? How would we make the Sabbath common? Well, we would make the Sabbath common by doing things that no longer causes the Sabbath to include God in our life. On this day, he wants to be that central figure in our life. And so we make it common, we profane the Sabbath, when we distance God and we don't include him, when we do things that are for us. We live in a world of conveniences. And so often it's easy for us to blur the lines of holy and common during this time period. We could discuss chores or errands or shopping or going to the movies or reading the newspaper or going to the park or whatever the case might be. We could compile a list of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. But the interesting part about the Sabbath is God doesn't make that list, does he? He simply says, remember to keep it holy. Remember that this day includes me. Right? This day includes me. I want my presence to be in your Sabbath, in the Sabbath day, in your activities on the Sabbath. And so it's up to us to analyze that very carefully and to look at our lives and say, okay, well, if I break out the vacuum cleaner, if I detail the car, if I cut the lawn, right, if I go shopping, if I do any of these other things, if I get gas, why am I doing those things? And by doing those, am I pushing God out? Throughout the years of the church, many have made lists of things to do and things not to do. For the Jews, it's called the Mishnah. It's one of the two parts of the Talmud, and unfortunately even the Church of God had those sort of unofficial lists many years ago. But it's up to each and every one of us to examine our own lives through the use of God's Spirit living in us, if we indeed keep God's Sabbath holy or if we keep it common, or if we keep certain times of the Sabbath holy or certain times of the Sabbath common. We can disinvite God or we can invite God throughout the day. God's instruction, though, is for us to include him from sunset to sunset, from evening throughout the following day. So how are we doing? How are you and I doing? We make the Sabbath common by justifying actions on the Sabbath that we should and could be doing on other days of the week. And so where do we draw that line? Where do we draw the line? Years ago in the church, and I even still hear it every once in a while, not now, is the saying, well, maybe that's an ox in a ditch. Right? We have this phrase, maybe it's an ox in a ditch. Or we pronounce it was an ox in a ditch. It's interesting that phrase does not appear anywhere in the King James, in the New King James or the Old King James, the ox in a ditch. It's not there. There are a few places that we sort of make that phrase up, though. Let's go back to the book of Deuteronomy. Let's get a baseline here of what's expected. Deuteronomy chapter 22. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 1. Here's sort of the baseline. We'll build upon this, but let's set the foundation first. Deuteronomy 22, you shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and hide yourself from them. You shall certainly bring them back to your brother. And if your brother is not near you or if you do not know him, then you shall bring it to your own house and it shall remain with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it to him. You shall do the same with his donkey, and so you shall do with his garment. With any lost thing of your brother's which he has lost and you have found, you shall do likewise. You must not hide yourself. You must not hide yourself. How would you hide yourself from something lost? You would ignore it, right? Oh, that's my neighbor's cow. That's my neighbor's whatever. I'm sure he'll find it. I'm sure it'll be okay. Right? God says, don't do that. Don't hide yourself from taking care of that property that belongs to your brother. Taking care of an unusual situation, though, is unexpected, right? You don't expect to look out your window and see your neighbor's cow, right? Or maybe in our modern cases, maybe the car slowly riding down because the transmission went out or something. You see it slowly past your window or any number of any other situations. These are unexpected. They're unplanned. Right, and this is the command here in Deuteronomy 22. Nobody purposely lets their donkey go, their ox go. None of us purposely leaves our coat or a purse or a bag or something here at church, but sometimes we do. Right? We forget things and we leave things behind. It's unexpected. Have you ever planned to lose your wallet? We don't, do we? And yet we do sometimes, accidentally, unplanned. And this is what the command here in Deuteronomy 22 covers. If something unexpected happens, and in this case, your brother's ox or sheep or some animal accidentally, unplanned, gets out and wanders past your house, run out and grab it, safeguard it, protect it for your brother. Okay, let's build on this. Let's go to Luke. Follow me to Luke 14. Luke 14 and verse 5. Luke 14, verse 5. There's a healing that took place here, and the leaders were upset. And so Jesus rebuffs them. He says, he answers them saying, which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? So here we have an ox that's fallen into a pit on the Sabbath day. And he challenges the leaders. He said, would you not go help that ox? An animal getting caught up in old fence wire or some issue. Would you not go help that animal? Would you not, in this case, would you not go free that donkey or that ox? Would you not go help that animal out? Again, it's the unplanned, isn't it? It's the unexpected. Nope, it's the Sabbath. The animal's struggling. Nope, sorry, I can't help him. If he's still alive come sunset, I'm there. Now, this is not what Jesus Christ is saying. It's unplanned, right? It's unexpected. The flat tire on the way to church. You call a friend. The friend answers, oh no, sorry, it's the Sabbath. You just stay there on the side of the road, hope that no other cars hit you. I'll be there after sunset. The water pipe breaks. What do you do? Oh, wow. Houses will be flooded by sunset, but okay. I'll just sit here. I won't do anything. No, you shut off the water, don't you? Go and grab some towels, set up some fans maybe, and you leave it. You deal with the rest after sunset. But you address the animal. You help the animal get out of the pit. Let's back up to Luke 13. One chapter before. Verse 10, Luke 13, verse 10. He was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could in no way raise herself up. But Jesus saw her. He called her to him and said to her, woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And he said to the crowd, there are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath day. The Lord then answered him and said, hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? So ought this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath? And when he had said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and the multitudes rejoiced. Here we have a healing on the Sabbath. And we see this other aspect that very closely refers us back to what we read earlier in Deuteronomy chapter 22. Are you caring? Are you a caring individual that will take care of something unexpected? Will you take care of, in this case, your animal? Do you feed your animal? Do you water your animal on the Sabbath? Of course we do. For those that have pets and things. We take care of those animals. We do those things in large part based on this. But in many cases, when we use that ox in a ditch sort of concept, it's something unplanned, something unexpected. Right? We don't say, oh, it was an ox in a ditch, I had to run the vacuum. Right? It's an ox in a ditch, I had to go weed the gardens. I had to cut the grass. I had to wash the windows. I couldn't see God's beautiful creation. An ox in a ditch, I had to clean the windows. Again, are we including God's presence, or are we doing something for ourselves? Do our actions reinforce the sacredness of the Sabbath? Or do they weaken it by making it common as the other 6 days? It speaks to our actions. So here are a couple scenarios. Is it okay to go to the park? Is it okay to go to the park? Why are you going to the park? That's the first question. Why are you going to the park? Maybe it's okay as long as it's sort of an occasional thing that reinforces the Sabbath. Are you going there to sort of sneak in a little workout routine? We're going to go to the park and we'll walk 5 miles. If it becomes something routine, though, going for the picnic, playing, tossing the ball. Now we're starting to encroach on the Sabbath, aren't we? It becomes something we want to do. The gas in the car, same scenario. No, why can we not gas up before the Sabbath? There is such a thing called the preparation day. You can Google or you can search that phrase in your Bible app. It appears several times. And in every case, the preparation day always refers to the day before the day of holy convocation. Whether it's in reference to one of the holy days or the weekly Sabbath, the preparation day is always the day before. So what is okay to do on the Sabbath? Well, we're not going to get a list. There's not going to be a list of do's and don'ts. But I would encourage you to consider the things you should be doing on the Sabbath are things that enhance and reinforce the holiness of this time. Right? This 24-hour plus or minus a few seconds, it enhances the holiness of the Sabbath. It reinforces our relationship with God. It's things that cause us to reflect upon God, that seek to apply more of his character. So what is it that God expects of us? I would submit to you that God is holy, and the Sabbath is holy. Then our goal is actually found back in Leviticus chapter 11. So what does God expect? If God is holy, and through his presence, then the Sabbath is holy, then I would submit that this perhaps should be our goal each Sabbath. Leviticus chapter 11. And let's read parts of verses 44 and 45. This section here is in regards to clean and unclean foods. But the principle that's described here is profound. Leviticus chapter 11 and verse 44. For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Verse 45, for I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. Now, we're not ancient Israel that literally walked out of Egypt, but each year we do commemorate our own leavings of Egypt, right? Our own sinful past that we're walking out of, and we're striving to leave that spiritual Egypt that each of us have. Our goal here is to be holy like God is holy. Our goal is to have his mindset. And when it comes around every 7 days to the Sabbath, this should be what our Sabbath is focused on. It's actions and thoughts and conversations and et cetera, that help align us with verses 44 and 45. It should be things that allow us to include God. God has pronounced the day holy. We can ignore that pronouncement. We can remember the Sabbath day to wash our car, or we can remember the Sabbath day to be holy like God is, to include him in our life, to include him in all that we do from Friday sunset throughout the following day. God expects us to be holy, to be sacred, especially on the days that he himself has identified as sacred and holy. Out of all the billions of people who live on the face of this planet, he's chosen you and me to reveal that this can be done. He's asked us to be the example that this is doable, that this is doable. So here's your challenge. Here's your challenge for the balance of this Sabbath and for future Sabbaths. Guard your actions. Monitor your actions. Watch your actions. Consider your actions. Consider what you're speaking about. Consider where you go, what you do. God's Sabbath is 24 hours. It's not just the daytime portion. It began last night at sunset. Guard and watch all that you do and say, and see if it aligns here with Leviticus 11, verses 44 and 45. Are your actions commonizing this time, or is it reinforcing that God indeed is part of your life during that time? You could talk about what you're studying. You could talk about principles of leadership based on Mark 10, verses 42 through 45. You could talk about serving one another based on Matthew 22, verses 37 through 40. Serving one another is a huge component. We have individuals here that come and serve and help with the setup here and the arrangement of things. And we have people that are homesick or shut in. Have you considered visiting them on the Sabbath? Stopping by before you come to church, seeing them after you leave church. We have many that are shut in, that are not able to come be with us in person for health reasons. On the Sabbath, you could talk about the hope that we have in this calling. The world around us has no hope. Those who suffer death and terrible things, they don't understand what is happening here on this earth. They don't know who the God of little g. They don't understand who the God of this age is. God gets the blame for a lot of things in the world. Why did God let little Johnny die, little Susie die? Talk about the hope that we have in this calling. We could discuss the application of one of God's laws that maybe you find interesting or difficult. You could talk about how to be holy. What actions constitute holiness? We are to be a holy people to God, and that extends beyond this Sabbath day. So how are you being holy at work? How are you involving God even during the week in your actions? What does that look like? Does all my speech have to include Bible references, Mr. Dowd? Sometimes we jump sort of to the other ditch. Okay, well then, every other word has to be a Bible verse, right? Every other sentence, I have to quote scripture. Well, I can't do that, so maybe I'll just be quiet for 24 hours. That's not the intent here. But we should ensure that our speech follows the concepts of keeping the Sabbath holy and keeping the Sabbath sacred while acknowledging that this is God's day. Consider John 15. I'll give you a few reference verses here. For the sake of time, we won't turn to them. But John 15, verse 19, God says, I have chosen you. Right? He has chosen you to help be a part of the Sabbath day. He has chosen you to come before him at this holy assembly, to come into his presence. He's chosen you to remember to keep the Sabbath holy. Acts chapter 13, verse 47, we're to be a light to the Gentiles. Luke 8, verses 10 through 16, we're seeds planted, we're a light on a hill. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, we're to be a living sacrifice, not conformed to this world. I had neighbors doing remodeling projects today. I had one neighbor break out his John Deere and start cutting his grass. Rayan woke up early this morning to a weed eater running. You and I are not to conform to this world. We're to be doing something different. The world has no idea what it means to be a holy people to God. It first off starts with God's calling and that response. You and I understand what it means to be holy. God expects us to keep this day in a way that includes his presence. Because in the end, God simply wants to dwell with us. He wants to dwell with us. Making a full circle here on the topic, God wants his presence with us. Zechariah chapter 8 and verse 8 says that God will not dwell with the profane. And on this day out of seven that he established to be with his people, he wants to dwell with his people. But you and I can be like ancient Israel, and we can hide our eyes from the Sabbath. And so as a result, then, God would choose not to dwell with us as we commonize his time, as we profane his time. Let's turn finally back to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58. And we'll read the last two verses of Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. God speaking here through the prophet Isaiah, he says, "If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, holy to the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight in the Lord. Then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken." God offers a promise. It's a beautiful promise. If we will remember to keep his Sabbath holy, then he offers a response in verse 14. But the blessing doesn't come before the action, does it? God never operates that way. He never blesses us before we tithe. It's always after, isn't it? He doesn't pre-reward something that he hopes we will do. We have the first action to take. We have the first action here in verse 13 to remember to keep his Sabbath holy. And if we do, there are tremendous blessings afforded to us in verse 14. In conclusion, brethren, God has given us the Sabbath to help teach us how to be holy. It is holy time because God's presence is in this time. So on the Sabbath day, he seeks for us to be reminded that we are to be holy people as well. Brethren, let's remember to keep the Sabbath holy.